Mr. King, Reel 5. We're still talking about the Willington and your very early training days and the weapons that you were being introduced to. We've done the Bren gun, the 2-inch mortar. Were there any other weapons that arrived at that time?
No. Not that I recall. Just that's all there was.
You said that you got involved those sporting days or sporting afternoons. Mm-hmm. What sports were you doing?
Well, there was odd football, of course, anybody that can play football, he got involved in the local football teams, the company football teams, that is, not the local ones, the company football teams. And number 4 ITC, which was the sort of the convention centre, Willington, Spennymoor, Ushermoor and Eshwinney, I would still and call it 4 ITC. If you were good enough, of course, you got onto the 4 ITC football team, which really had a great team, you know, because there was footballers from all the national teams, you know, who had been called up. And there were quite a number of, you know, I remember Nicholson, was Tottenham man. I knew him fairly well, of course, because I got to know him later on. Billy Nicholson and quite a good few footballers of national field. But I didn't get on to football, I wasn't interested in football, to be honest. I was in the first company running and I was sort of run for the company and run for the ITC at the, you know, the USA sports day now and again, down when Bransforth opened out actually. And of course, I wasn't at Willington all that long. I was at Willington maybe almost at the end of the training, I think, when Bransforth opened. And when Bransforth was finished, and everybody was then shipped down to Bransforth, of course. I went on to the Carter in Willington, in Bransforth.
But well, we've come to that in shortly, actually. We're getting near the end of this particular thing. Other sports at that time, cricket or cross-country running?
No, cricket wasn't part of the battalion. Well, not the battalion, but the in Willington, it was just mostly football and it wasn't organised running, actually. In fact, the only organised running really was that, if I recall, anybody who came in first in the cross country run that was maybe sort of organised maybe once got a free weekend pass. And that was the extent of that was it. And, but other than that, as I say, that I almost had a cross country run every week. You know, I used to, keep blokes fit, of course. There wasn't any, I don't think there was a great deal of competitive element in it. It was just just mainly to fit, you know, make people more fit.
What were the PT exercises that you were doing then?
Well, we used to do PT, of course. We used to maybe have a session every day of PT. It was just mostly, as I say, limping up exercises mostly, you know. There wasn't any great, of course there wasn't any facilities for gymnasium stuff, it was just mostly following the instructor doing the old jumps and that sort of thing, you know.
What PT uniform or clothing had they given you?
Oh, there was, you got 2 pairs of black trunks, like, shorts and singlets, two white singlets, if I recall. And that was it. That was it. Oh, and a pair of sand shoes, as we know them then, maybe called plimsolls. You know, just like a sand shoe, you know, rolls type sand shoe. And that was it. That was your. That was the full extent of your equipment.
When you'd finished your working day, and you'd have some form of tea or high tea.
Oh yeah, well, the tea was mostly, as I say, as I recall, used to get bloody onions and tomato sauce or something like that. But I had a great deal of recollection for it. It was mostly just big slugs of bread and jam and that sort of thing, you know. It wasn't nothing sort of highfalutin about it. But everybody devoured it. I mean, of course, naturally at that age, everybody was hungry and needed as much as they could eat, I think, yeah. But there didn't seem to be any shortage, I mean, at that time in the war. There didn't seem to be any shortage of bread or stuff like that, at least in the army there was.
Cups of tea, of course.
Oh, yes, I used to get them almost, well, I'm not saying unlimited tea, but really highly sweetened tea with evaporated milk, you know, the old sort of always a yellowy looking cup of tea, you know.
Were they putting bromide in the tea at that time?
Oh yes, no doubt about that, yeah.
And what was the purpose of that?
Well, keep your sexual fantasies down, I suppose, eh? And you know, there was plenty going on, of course, for young lads, of course. There was all the local girls and there was local dancers, of course. And
yes, I was going to ask you how you got on with the people of Willingdon. You have touched upon them, that they were, in a way, a bit protective towards you being...
Oh, yes, that's right. They were very protective in that sense.
But you didn't live far from Willingdon anyway.
I lived in Cook, yeah.
Did they, you know, as soldiers, did they treat you well in the town itself?
Oh, yes, no question about that. I found that, in fact, I met my wife then, you know, because she had worked in one of the confectioner's shops in Willingdon. And that's where, you know, we met then, and but we've been married 56 years ago. So, I'd met him before that, of course, before the war, just before the war, actually. But, you know, we used to see it every day, of course.
Did they invite you know, into their homes?
People, they were very good, very, very good. In fact, my wife's aunt, he was a bookmaker, her husband was a bookmaker, and she had the shop. My wife worked in the shop, and she used to prepare a meal every week and invite some of the lads around, you know, for a meal on a night time, yeah, which was very well appreciated, of course. And of course, then everybody was sort of had been training for a few weeks, of course, and started to no doubt be proud of the uniform, lots of them, and looked after themselves. And,
were you taught regimental history as part of this pride
not
motivation?
Not a great deal. There was no sort of there wasn't any elaboration. I can't remember any elaboration of. You used to hear what they did. Durham had, had the most battalions in the First World War and all that sort of thing. But no, there was no, I don't think there was any sort of history attached to any instruction that I got.
And the DLI marching song, did you learn that at this stage?
No, there wasn't any. As I say, there wasn't any.
We are lads of the DLI, that one.
Yeah, well, we used to do that. But as I say, there wasn't a great deal of sense of history, you know. In it, I think it was just because our forefathers had sang it that we sang it, I think. And, you know, there was the usual roll of the barrel and that sort of thing. But, as I say, no, I can't remember any, no sort of social history of
At this stage, being in the army, were they telling you about the dangers of VD and how to...
No,
keep clear of it.
There wasn't a great deal of that instruction either. That was sort of all sort of kept under wraps as well. You know, you heard about, you heard through the grapevine that so and so had been up to say the MO and that sort of thing. But it was all a bit thought a bit dirty, I think.
You weren't showing you these films.
No. There was no.
At the end of the day, as I say, when you'd finished your work, how did you spend your evenings in Willingdon?
Well, I said there was the pubs, of course, but lots of lads just used to stop in the barracks because there wasn't much else to do. And in fact, used to clean up for the next day, get your kit ready for that. It was the most things lads used to do. You used to have to clean your kit ready for guard duty or picket duty, and there was fire pickets, of course, and that sort of thing that everybody was doing. So it was almost a full life, you know. That.
How did you keep your webbing and your equipment, and your brasses clean?
Blanco, of course, which was an amount of blanco below. And
the brasses on your uniform?
Oh yes, I used to clean them, of course, naturally.
How did you keep the brass off your uniform?
The button stick, of course.
The button stick.
Button sticks. That was part of the equipment, of course. You used to get a button stick.
And that was almost a nightly job,
yes,
as you say.
Well, that was one of the most important things, I think, that people used to have to get used to. Stopping into the barracks and cleaning the gear, ready for the next day, of course. That was the most important. Of course, your kit was almost, once you'd done the first few weeks, then the kit layout was the most important, of course, because that was inspected every day. And that was part of the, you know, what they looked for, of course, that you cleaned all your ball and buttons and that sort of thing, yeah.
Guard duties that you've mentioned, what was the standard of turnout expected of the guard?
Oh, high, very high standard, of course. You used to have a stick man, of course. And the stick man used to get exempt from actually doing the guards. He became the fetch and carry man. You know, he went down to the coke house and got the mails and all that sort of thing. And it was a big honour, of course, to get the stick. To be given the stick, as they called.
How was he chosen?
The officer mounting the guard, always used to choose the stick man.
And was that based on the smartest man on parade?
Oh yes, that was the turnout, of course, and lots of lads. In fact, I knew one lad in particular who used to loan his uniform out. He did nothing else, but almost entirely would keep his uniform that smart, that, you know, blankboard, well blankboard. The bloke used to borrow his uniform out and they were there with the stick. Later on, of course.
Did the measure of cleaning even get down to the soles of your boots?
Oh yes, you see. Well, in between, you know, the bit in between, you know, in between the sole and the heel. Oh, you see, you used to always look at that. That was had to be cleaned.
Mounting a guard, could you take me through the drill for mounting? Obviously, you're going to be on guard.
Oh yes, you're going to be on guard, of course. Well, the first thing, of course, was the guard inspection, where the used to be on the roll call for guard, of course. So there were six, normally six, only on the guard, and the stick man. So you'd have a corporal of the guard normally, but before that, of course, the guard would be inspected, the guard inspection. Would be maybe 10 minutes before the guard was mounted, when the sergeant would thoroughly inspect the guard first to make sure that you know the buttons were done open and all that sort of thing, and then after that, of course, he would pass you as fitting well, and then during the actual guard mounting parade, when the officer of the guard would inspect you. That was when the stick man was chosen. The sergeant didn't choose the stick man. The officer always used to choose the stick man. And it was all very, very high powered stuff that, it was mainly the cleanliness that they were looking for, of course, then. And you used to have your rifle inspected, of course, and that sort of thing. They marched off to the guard duties and used to do 2 hours on and 2 hours off now.
What were you guarding?
Well, not a lot in Willington, to be honest. But just used to mount the guard outside the battalion, outside the company HQ, in fact, which was, you used to have first of all you had a fire picket, which would be, most of the blokes just used to have to stop in the barrack, to make sure that, you know, the fire brigade. But in Willington, he used to mount a guard for the heck of it. I can't remember where the hell he used to. Where he used to go. It must have been around the welfare somewhere. I think they used to mount a guard around the welfare. They used to mount a guard. I think it would be the welfare. But it was just more or less one of those things where they mounted a guard just for the sake of mounting a guard. There was nothing to guard. In that sense, you know, you weren't guarding anybody's property or the barracks or anything like that. It was just to say that they'd gone through the system of mounting the guard.
Presumably part of your training.
All part of the training, of course, yeah.
Was it a 24-hour guard?
24-hour, yeah.
And could the officer appear at any time?
Well, of course, that was part of the thing, that you always had to be on the lookout for the officer of the guard coming and presenting arms, that sort of thing, guard turnout and that sort of thing. And, it was really important that you did the guard duty properly.
And did they teach you the challenge?
Turning out the guard, you know, guard turnout and that sort of, all those sort of things went on.
You of course lived at Crook, which is not far from Willington. You could almost walk home, couldn't you?
Yeah.
How often did you get home?
Very, very infrequently, actually.
They didn't give you much leave?
No. I think I would just get about 1 week in pass all the time I was in Willington.
Did you have a situation where there were odd men who went out without permission and so on?
Absentees, of course, there were a good few. Of course, I'm not saying there was a good few, but no doubt quite a lot of people did go adrift. There would be one or two absentees, but not as I remember to any great extent. I think you've got more absentees later on in the war, you know, rather than during initial training.
But you didn't get much opportunity for leave, as you say, or for a break in that. No. How long were you...
This was during the initial training, of course. I don't think anybody got any leave for the first 16 weeks. I think it might have been, as I said before, I think it was either 13 weeks or 16 weeks. I don't think anybody got any leave during that period.
How long were you at Willington?
Oh, I was just at Willington about, I don't think I was there during the full 16 weeks. Because I went down to the car in Willington. In Bransworth.
How would you
say they were bringing? You had people at Willington who had been sort of in the army then for 16 weeks, 4 months or so, and you had people at Bransworth who was all coming in, and you know, so it was a bit, you know, it was a sort of a fluid state of affairs then. And I went down to Willington, to Bransworth. To instruct on to be trained on the cadre, rather.
How would you come to be chosen for that?
Well, because I suppose I was always pissed out the bad out, you know. As I said, I was made sure I wasn't going to be a private all the time. So anyway, I got chosen to go down onto this cadre, and I actually took the mark on the cadre.
What kind of things were you doing?
I got an A+. Well, I was instructor under training, as they call them there. I was Lance Corporal, but I was promoted up, I think, to Lance Corporal there. And I used to do nothing out of mine. As I said, I was keen to get to do well. And I used to study all the pamphlets, all the army pamphlets I could get my hands on. At night time, I used to study all the pamphlets. But the cadre was used to get instruction, of course, full instructions on weapon training and that sort of thing. and it was mostly weapon training CADA really. And I then got the chance of doing being an instructor, or what is it called, instructor under training. And I used to start instructing these other CADA blokes on the rifle, LMG mostly, of course. And then started on to tactics, and you know, sort of broadened the range a little bit there. And as I say, I came out of that with the top. I got the top mark on the card actually.
And that was a final test, was it, that you had to go through?
Yeah, yeah. As a card instructor, yeah. And then by that time, of course, they would start forming companies in Bransworth then.
That's the main camp had opened.
Yeah, it was starting to form different companies. And I was then transferred into A Company, which was paddled out of the Page Bank Road actually. And I was then promoted up to Corporal. I was still instructing on the car, but I was still like a corporal in A Company, and I was there for early 1942, I think it was.
Can we examine that period of time? You say Bransworth camp. Can you describe the camp to me that had just been built and opened?
Well, the camp was a hooded camp, of course, built round the central parade ground. Fronting onto the parade ground was almost fronting onto the main branch, the main Willington Durham Road, Club Durham Road. There was only a belt of trees in between, and the camp was set sort of around there on three sides actually, because the other side was open to the main road. A Company was at the bottom, then B Company, C Company, and D Company, and each one was an individual company, a training company. And what we used to do, we used to meet the trains every Thursday, or every, I don't know, on a Thursday they used to get called in. And we used to meet the train in Bransworth, the corporals I'm talking about, corporals and sergeants. We used to meet the train at Bransworth, and as the blokes were getting off the train, we used to pick the likely looking candidates out and say, hey, you over here and you over there, and we used to gather 20 together or 30 together, I think it was 30. We used to gather parties of 20 I think it might have been, parties of 20. Say, right, oh, you 20 stop there, you 20 stop there. And the other sergeants, of course, were all on the same game. Because there was maybe about 200 or 300 blokes coming all together. One week, then you might get another one the next week or something like that. And then that was the nucleus of your platoon, and there was sort of raw recruits then, and you went through the procedure that we'd gone through at Willington and started training them from rock bottom again. And as I say, I was there early 1942, and of course it then started to become more like a battalion. In fact, it wasn't a battalion, of course, but called training companies. And there were sort of company competitions then, one company set against another, and much more regimented, of course. You know, the guard was a guard, it used to stand at the main gate, of course. Each company provided the guard a different night of the week, of course. And then you did more outside training then, of course, because you used to get down the Page Bank Road, the fields behind the barracks there, you know, and the fields near the barracks. You used to get the blokes into the fields doing cover, you know, and all that sort of thing, camouflage and cover and all that sort of thing. And of course there was a headquarters company which had maybe a couple of brain gun carriers. And they used to do a bit of field training, you know, sort of elementary field training, of course, around there. And that was about it, what I used to do at Bransworth.
Did you do recruiting drives, driving through the villages too?
No, I can't recall those. everybody was just called up. I mean, there was no need for recruiting knives as such. Everybody just got called up.
There must have been, as you say, a mixed bag of people, even if you're trying to select them the way you did.
Well, it was all hit and miss, of course, but as I say, you used to think, well, he looks a bright fellow, you know, and they just used to get them in. It was all very hit and miss. It wasn't sort of, as I say, it wasn't done sort of on a basis where you had to report anywhere off the train, you know. They usually just catch them off the train and say, all right, well, I knew, all right. And that was the hope, and that your prognostication was right, like that you used to, your forecast was right, that he was going to turn out all right.
They must have called on, using a word today, a great deal of man management skills, because you're meeting such a variety of people.
Yeah.
What was the quality of the recruits you were getting?
Well, they were quite good at the beginning. Quite good. In the early days, well, I think you were getting the people who were reconciled to being called up. In fact, you know, they knew they were going to be called up anyway. And I think there was a lot of that in it that come up where they knew that eventually they were going to be called up.
So they'd accepted it?
So I think they more or less accepted that one day they would be in the Army or the Navy or the Air Force.
And would get on with it?
And would just get on with that.
But you're saying towards the end of your period in 1942, was that changing?
Oh, I think it started to change after that. I think you've got the situation where they were really desperate for manpower, started getting desperate for manpower, and they were getting all sorts in, you know. I think they were really... I'm not saying they were scraping the barrel, I think they maybe were, as far as infantry recruits were concerned. I think they were starting to scrape the barrel, I think, a little bit then.
Were you getting quite well-educated men in as recruits?
Oh, yes. It was quite astonishing, the amount of... people, as I say, you used to get all sorts in. And, but oddly enough, I recall lots of what I would call the better educated people sometimes made the worst soldiers. You know? Well, maybe they thought about it a bit more than, you know, than the other lads, because the other lads were maybe more amenable to discipline. But the others started to question the discipline, of course.
How did you deal with those that may question what you were doing? I mean, at the end of the day, you had the stripes.
There was always the threat, of course, that you put them on the charge, you know what I mean? That was it. That was your ultimate sanction, of course. That you could always say, right, well, if you don't do it, you know, that's it. You're in the fissure, sort of stuff.
Would you try some kind of persuasion, or before this point?
I always took the attitude that I would warn people once. And I always used to say, look, if I used to say, look, with his hat off or whatever, I'll warn you this time. No, don't do it again, like, otherwise, that's it. Next time I say, yeah, that's it. And that used to work very well for me. Maybe it didn't work for everybody. But it used to work very well for me.
Overall discipline in this training camp, was it pretty stiff?
Pretty stiff, yeah.
What kind of punishments might be dished out?
Oh, well, in Bradsford, of course, you used to get, I think there was more confinement to barracks. Was a hard thing to accept in because, you know, lads used to get out to Durham and, you know, all over around the area, I suppose, when you were off duty. So if anybody got confined to barracks, that was a real blow, I think. But it wasn't any sort of nothing that nobody could sort of put up with, I think.
No great harshness.
No, I don't think there was any. You used to get the occasional blow, but you used to get shown in the guard room for something silly, like, you know. But even that, I don't suppose was all that terribly harsh, you know.
doubling round the parade ground with arms above your head.
Used to get some of that at Bradsford. Used to get some of that. But not a great day in mind. But well, yes, you did get some of that.